This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Boards.org.
Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Our first guest today is Chris Lowry from the Lansing State Journal. We're going to talk a little basketball, a little football, and other things about Michigan State with Chris. So let's bring our good friend Chris Lowry. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Great, Earl. How you been?
Hey, doing great, and always a pleasure to talk with you. You know, the summer basketball is going on now. You know, players are trying to get ready. What do you think the players really need to do to get ready for fall fall preparation to get ready for this fall? I know they do a lot of things, but what do you think in your mind they need to really work on?
Well, obviously the first thing is the cohesiveness that they had with Draymond Green as the leader last year. I think that's the central point that needs to be addressed this fall and heading into the winter. It's hard to really put a value on the leadership that Draymond gave this team, not just for last year as a senior, but all 4 years that he was in East Lansing. And I mean, the logical candidates to step up, I mean, you've got Derek Nix, who is coming off a situation with his arrest and plea bargain for driving under the influence. And then you have Keith Appling and Adrian Payne as rising juniors who a lot's expected out of them both on the court, but they're at a point now in their careers where they have to kind of take that next step and be leaders off the court as well, the way that both Darrell Summers and Kalen Lucas didn't do the past few years when they had the opportunity.
Yes, and also, what about as far as Payne and Nix, what do they have to do as far as their game development-wise to get their games even better for the coming year?
Yeah, there needs to be more consistency with that. And I heard the other day that they had a pretty spirited battle between the two of them, and they're only going to make each other better. I mean, that's the one thing that I think that is those teams the past decade or, in his time, I don't think he's had this kind of depth and these kind of quality centers that can go against each other every day in practice. So I think you just need some better and more consistent low block scoring from each of them, Nix and Payne both showed plenty of flashes of that. And then secondly, you need them to be aggressive and attack the board. I mean, if Tom puts them on the court together, they could be a pretty lethal rebounding combination. I mean, there's two things that those guys have that they can do, and that's fight for position and use their size to box people out. And, if they can take that next step, that helps. I mean, that really does help alleviate a lot some of the loss of Draymond Green if they can prove to be those kind of rebounders as well as giving that consistent scoring.
Yes, because that rebounding is always, that's been the staple of the Michigan State program is rebounding. And I know that they're going to have to step up even more so because last year, Draymond for the last 4 years, he's been an outstanding rebounder. Somebody's going to have to fill that void now. Yes, they're good players, but we don't know, can they really be very aggressive rebounders?
Yeah, and especially when you got a guy like Brandon Dawson coming off a knee injury, you need a little bit more from those big guys to kind of offset that, because that's one thing that Izzo has tried to emphasize throughout his tenure is the guards need to rebound too. And, that's if you can have some big guys that are gobbling up the rebounds, then you can focus a little bit more on knocking down shots on the outside or defending a little bit more. You take some of that responsibility off the guards to crash the boards as much as they do if you have the power post inside.
Oh, that's for sure. And, yeah, so those are things that we're definitely going to have to look out for and keep an eye on for basketball because they've got a lot of work to do. And, of course, they've got to integrate the new guys. And how do you see so far the new guys? It seem, at least from the couple I've seen, they seem to be doing pretty well as far as integrating with the other players already there.
Yeah, and I think that the nature of the college game anymore, and these kids have been – recruited, and they've played open gyms with guys that are already on campus and for a number of years. So, I think that the meshing there will be – it's going to be really interesting to see what Denzel Valentine does. I mean, because I really think that he could bring a lot of the same attributes, more from a guard side than from a forward side, as to what Draymond brought to the team the past few years. I mean, he's so versatile. He can get up above the rim. He can get to the rim. He can distribute the ball. He's got great court awareness. He can shoot the ball. I mean, he's got so many varied talents, just like Draymond Green did. But again, more in a guard body than in a forward body. So it's going to be interesting to see how he develops early on, because, I mean, he could really be a difference maker. I mean, he could be a Steve Smith-like difference maker for this team. And, Gary Harris, we know all about Gary Harris being a high flyer and scoring it at a lot in Indiana. So I don't think that he's going to see much of a bump in the transition. And, the other guys with Kaminsky coming off the injury and Costello, it'll be interesting to see if they can crack the rotation, because this is going to be a very deep team. I mean, I wrote the other day about how it's similar to the 2000 championship team. And that's one thing that team had. They can go 10 deep. And this team can go 10 deep as well. And they can have the kind of versatility with a number of different guys that you can see a number of different combinations in Tom's lineup out there. And maybe it'll be necessary to get early on to get some chemistry and to figure out who meshes with each other.
Yeah, because I think that might be the biggest problem, who's going to mesh together. We've seen there are a lot of guys who haven't played that much. So, like Paul Bird, there's other players that just haven't played that much, even though, and Alex Garner haven't played that much. So those other guys are going to have to get more experience if they want to help out this year.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that I think that is missing a little bit. And in writing my piece for Sunday's paper, that was one thing that I didn't get to address. But I mean, they need a knockdown shooter like Charlie Bell. They need a guy who can D up like Charlie Bell. I mean, Russell Berg could be that guy at the wing to hit those shots. I mean, we've heard about it for years, but injuries have kind of kept him from becoming the factor. So I mean, can he do that? Can Brandon Kearney be that kind of lockdown defender that, after the Dawson injury, he really came into his own and played some good defense. I mean, for a kid that people thought might end up redshirting last year, he provided a pretty good spark for that team. So, I mean, there are – and Travis Trice, too. I mean, Travis Trice, when he wasn't injured, and he's got such a gutsy kind of style of play, when he's healthy, he's a difference maker, because he is such a north and south attacking point guard that it takes off some of the ball handling responsibilities for Keith Appling and allows him to create on the wing. So, I mean, you'll see, there's so many varied talents on this team. There's, you have one or two guys that can do a lot of things, and you've got a lot of guys that can specialize and do the things and play the roles that they need to play.
Yes, that's for sure. And what about, similar problems you have with football, even though it's a different nature, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. The inexperience, that's the one thing that I think is different between the two, is that you've got a little bit of experience in running the team here with Appling, having been the point guard. You don't have that with Andrew Maxwell taking over at quarterback. It's kind of an unknown commodity. And, that's something that we've been waiting to see. We didn't get a chance to see that in the spring with his knee injury. Coach D'Antonio had said throughout the summer that he's been healthy and participating in activities and being up to full strength. And he did say that had it have been a regular season game, he probably could have. Maxwell could have probably played in the spring game. So I think that'll be interesting to see. But you're right, there is depth on that football team as well that's very similar to that. Where you've got depth at linebacker and guys who can tackle, you've got a little bit of depth in coverage where guys can, are going to be able to push each other and get the best secondary out there. I mean, it's amazing to think that just a few years ago, there were more position battles than there are right now. And I mean, that's a testament to the fact that, in part, that D'Antonio's staff has done a great job of going out there and identifying kids early in the process and getting them to commit and getting them, for the most part, to stay the course in coming to East Lansing. I mean, he had a couple, he had obviously one kid who went to decommitted and went to Ohio State and volunteered, an offensive lineman from Texas who decommitted. So, and it'll be interesting, to see this fall on the offensive line and defensive line, how much those depth areas play a factor, because that's why they've had the success they've had the past few years, is because of the depth.
Oh, for sure. I've always been concerned about, because the one thing with players, when you get players committing far away from home, I know most players prefer to play close to home so their parents and their relatives can come and see them. So I'm always concerned when players like from Texas who are decommitted and players like that, because really they want to stay close to home. Now he may get a chance to stay and play close to home. I always tell folks that, you have to understand that just because Michigan State got him doesn't mean they'll keep him, because most players do want their players, their family and their friends to be able to come and see them play. And if you're from Texas and you're in Michigan, that's almost impossible to come up each and every week to see your friends play.
Yeah, unless you're independently wealthy or have your own private jet or you've perfected the art of teleportation. That's usually the only way you can do that.
Yeah, that's just a shame, but that's the way it is in college sports. And I know more of the followers of their teams have to just appreciate that and not get up. So many people get upset when they see a guy decommits and go someplace. Or usually it's closer to home or something. But that's just all part of the process, isn't it?
Yeah, and, until they enact an early signing day for these kids, which, I mean, coaches have to be going bonkers, because you have to not only recruit the kid to get him to commit to you, but you have to continue to recruit him throughout the process. And no other sport has that. No other sport has that. They all have early signing days. So why is football held to a different standard? I mean, it goes to the Joe Paterno situation in a way. I don't want to, definitely don't want to cross the lines on likening these two things, but it goes to the to the situation where the NCAA has a different set of rules for football than it does for any other sport, and it treats it with such kid gloves, and it refuses to change in a lot of ways. It refuses to acknowledge things, and it's very hypocritical. So, I mean, how can you put these football coaches in this kind of situation, where they've got to recruit and re-recruit and continue to recruit even after a kid said, yes, I'm coming to play for you, coach, because at some point, that's money wasted for these universities to have to continually fly or phone calls or whatever. So I hope we see that. I really hope we see an early signing day for football soon, because, that's how these things keep growing. And I mean, especially with recruiting growing out of control like it has been.
Yeah, and the other one, there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of talk on the transfer rule. They say they're going to finally, streamline or change the transfer rules so kids can, if they want to leave, or if they change their mind, or they stay in a place for a year or two and they want to leave, I hear they're going to make it a little easier. I know I'll wait and see if that ever happens, but that seems to be the thought right now.
Yeah, that's exactly what you said. Wait and see, because that's kind of one of those situations that they've constantly tried to make it difficult for student athletes without making any more difficulty for coaches who are going job to job. I mean, the fallacy of saying, okay, this is a student athlete and he's here for an education. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know that's a big fallacy, because the millions and billions of dollars that are being generated by these kids and not getting a profit, they should have some semblance of control. And that would be one issue right there that would benefit essentially the labor force of college football. And, you take away that labor force of college football, there's nothing.
Well, you got that right.
There's nothing. And, these kids, it makes me laugh, too, when I hear them saying now that, he's coming here for an education. He picked the school, not the coach. Well, come on.
That's not true.
Follows college sports or even remotely knows that doesn't hold any kind of water when a coach leaves after recruiting a kid. It doesn't.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, Chris, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. We'll get back together soon and talk a little bit more sports. As you know, football season is right around the corner, so we'll be seeing a lot of each other real soon, buddy.
Yes, it is. Sneaking up on us quick, Earl.
Yep.
Enjoy the rest of the summer, my friend.
Okay. Yep, we'll talk to you later, Chris.
All right, take care,
Earl. Thank you. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Chris Solari from the Lansing State Journal talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
In the coming week on Talk of the Nation, the Penn State report lays out a number of steps to prevent future abuse. So how do you change the culture of a school? Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us on Wednesday. All that and, of course, much more. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Join us in the week ahead on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Scott Pohl. Here's the weather. Today will be sunny with a high of 95. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low of 72. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, maybe some rain and thunderstorms and a high of 101. Wednesday, partly sunny, maybe rain and thunderstorms, the high in the mid-80s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, now we're going to talk a little baseball with the head coach of Michigan State University's baseball team, Jake Boss Jr. Let's bring in Jake and talk a little baseball. Jake, how you been doing, my friend?
I've been great, Earl. How are you?
Hey, okay. I know we haven't had a chance to talk much since summer's been going. I know recruiting never ends, does it? So you're always recruiting. So
yeah. A lot of truth to that, Earl. You know, we're always looking for the next guys and trying to find them, you know, younger talent and trying to get ourselves ready for, you know, the next few years. So yeah, and recruiting never stops.
Yeah. Now I know you've got a couple of kids, Allman, who's from Holt, has decided to stay here at Michigan State, and of course Gibson and his son, who both decided they had chances to go pro, but they both decided to stay and play college ball, which means you'll have them for at least 3 years. So that has to be a big plus, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really is, Earl. I mean, those are two pretty talented kids, and you know, we've been fortunate that we've had six incoming high school kids drafted the last 2 years, and every one of them decided to come to school. And so, you know, that bodes well for our program, but I think it speaks to the type of kid that they are and the families that they come from.
Yeah, now what do you see kids, what's their biggest transition from high school to college baseball? What do they have to learn the most?
Well, the speed of the game, I think, is the biggest thing. You know, the consistent velocity that comes from the mound. You know, they're going to see tighter breaking balls. They're going to see, you know, better sliders. Some of them may see a slider for the very first time. And, you know, so that's it for the offensive guys. And then, you know, for the guys on the mound, you know, if they make a mistake, it's going to get hit pretty hard. And that's the biggest thing. They can't get away with a lot of the things that they used to be able to. So, you know, the speed of the game is probably the biggest thing. It's just, you know, the ability to kind of fine-tune things and take things up to the next level.
Is it a big adjustment for outfielders who play outfield ball in high school to adjust to the college game and playing outfield like out at your park there at Michigan State? Is that a big adjustment for players to make?
Yeah, you know, it can be because, they usually play a little bit deeper at this level. Mm-hmm. More guys have more power, and, you know, the ball comes off the bat a lot harder. And so it takes them a little while to get used to the reading the ball off the bat and the angles that they may have to play based on how hard a ball is hit, you know, when they have to go to the right or their left. And so, yeah, that's a it's certainly a big part of their transition too.
Yes, and of course, pitchers, I guess they really have to work on trying to throw breaking balls for strikes. A lot of them can throw fastballs for strikes and over the plate, but a lot of pitchers just don't have that confidence, if they're trailing in a count to throw a breaking ball if they're, say, it's 3-1 or something like that. Is that the main thing you have to work on, getting pitchers to make sure they have enough confidence where they feel they can throw a strike when they're behind in the count?
Yeah, that's a big thing. You know, I think at this level, too, pitchers need to realize that everybody throws hard, you know, and maybe a better way to say it is everybody can catch up to velocity. And so it doesn't really matter how hard you throw at this level now. You know, guys are going to catch up to it. And so you need to have, you know, a secondary pitch. If you come out of the bullpen, you need to have really three pitches for, you know, that you can throw for strikes if you're a starting pitcher, and you know, realizing that you're not going to strike everybody out, and you know, sometimes less is more when you're on the mound. Those guys that try to throw harder end up getting hit pretty hard sometimes.
Yes. Now you have to deal with more players, you know, in the college game and sitting on the bench there. Is that a challenge for you? You know, trying to manage so many more players that you have in the college game as opposed to the high school game.
Well, you hope so. You know, you hope it is a challenge, because that means you got a lot of good players. You got a lot of competition at several positions, and you know, so the deeper we get, you know, the last couple of years we've had, you know, a pretty deep bench, and that's been a big part of, you know, what we've tried to do. We try to keep guys fresh and try to keep them, you know, ready to play, and that can be a challenge, especially when, you know, you're trying to win every game, and, you know, there's no real time to waste. And so, you know, guys do have to realize that, you know, it's not an intramural program, and the best guys are going to play, and you know, the chance for guys to develop really comes in practice and inter-squad games, but if they're not ready to go in a ball game, they're not going to see much playing time.
Jake, do you ever think you'll see a time when they'll use college baseball's fall games and count them towards the spring games, or count some of them as opposed to just counting everything in February and on in the spring? Will you think ever see a time where they'll count some of the fall games, or if they'll play fall games?
You know, it's possible. I think that's all going in front of the NCAA here in the next month, and you know, we'll see what happens. I don't anticipate any change coming anytime soon, but I think the important thing right now is that it's being talked about, it's being discussed, and you know, we'll see if it gains any momentum, you know, here in the next month or two. But, you know, I think something needs to be done. There's a lot of good baseball in the Big Ten, and for us to only get one bid to the tournament the last couple of years and then two this year, you know, there are probably four or five teams that were very capable of having some success in the NCAA tournament from last season. And so I think, you know, something's got to change. We got to do something for the northern schools.
Yes, they certainly do, because it's been this way for so long, as you know, and I know I've been following it for so long. It's basically been a little frustrating for us up here, because we see a lot of teams that deserve, not just Michigan State, and teams from our, but all, like you say, all in the Big Ten. There have been certainly been years when we could easily see three or four teams getting into the big tournament.
That's right. There's a lot of talent in our league, and I think a lot of times we get you know, we get a bad rap for some reason on a national level, and it's too bad because our kids are certainly deserving.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the All-Star game, the Major League All-Star game. I guess I've gotten a little ticked off, because it seems like they've turned the Major League All-Star game into basically a glorified exhibition game. I mean, it's not the game. Well, I know growing up, things were different then. You know, it was a real All-Star game. It was a real game. You'd only see like eight or nine players or a few players getting off the bench, getting in. You know, they stick with the starters for the most part. Now it seems like they've got to get everybody in the game. It's almost mandatory that they get everybody in the game these days. And it's totally different. The guys seem to have a different attitude about the All-Star game.
Well, things have changed, there's no doubt, Earl, and, you know, recently. And, you know, they try to put a little bit more, you know, at stake now with the winner of the All-Star game being able to, you know, play four games in the World Series and be the home team for the first two, you know. And so that, you know, you kind of hope that would change things when they did that a few years ago. But, yeah, I think it depends on the guy now. It's so individualized, and it's, you know, it's a lot of things are done by fan balloting and fan voting. And, you know, I don't – there's certainly some merit to that, but I think there have been some guys, you know, a lot of guys that maybe haven't been deserving of playing in the All-Star game that have been in and been starting. And so, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you realize you're never going to please everybody, and somebody's always going to have something to say about it regardless of what you do. But, you know, you try to hope that they're going to be able to, you know, at least compete and compete at a high level.
Yes, that's for sure. And I mean, it's always been one of those things. I mean, ever since, I don't know, I've at first I was a big fan of interleague play. I think I've gone again a little bit the other way now, interleague play. But I mean, it looks like it's here to stay. How do you feel about interleague play?
Well, I like it, to be honest with you. I probably didn't at first, but you know, I like it. I think it gives a chance, you know, to see more, you know, teams, more teams that you maybe only see on television. And, you know, when they come into town, you can go see those guys play, you know, head to head. I think,
I think it's good for the league. I think it's good for interest and sparking interest in the league. And, you know, it's kind of it's a fun thing to see those rivalry games in New York and Chicago and things like that where they may not play each other a whole lot. And so, you know, I'm a big fan of it. I hope it continues, and I think it will, especially if a team like Milwaukee comes back to the American League, then you're looking at 15 teams in each league, and you would have at least one interleague series every weekend.
Yes, it seems like interleague play has definitely been a boon for getting more teams. I've been getting into the playoffs. That's one thing I have noticed. It seems like, you know, it used to be the same old teams every year in year out getting in the playoffs. But now, even with the playoff expansion, there's been a lot of more teams being able to get to the World Series. And that surprised me a little bit, how some teams come out of nowhere from year to year and get to the playoffs.
Well, it's a funny game, you know. You get hot at the right time, and you know, a lot of things can happen. And you know, it's a game of momentum. And so, you know, it's not always in our game. The most talented team doesn't always win. And I think that's the beauty of our sport, and that you know, you still have to get 27 outs. There's no clock. You know, the clock's never going to run out, and you know, you got to get 27 outs in order to win. And sometimes that can be tough to do.
Oh, that's for sure. Hey, when you look at your team and all the good players that you have, what areas do you think, when you see that, you really think you need to improve on for next year?
Well, we've got some unknowns, especially in the infield. We lost our second baseman, our third baseman, our shortstop, and you know, I like the guys we've got coming in. I like the guys that we've got returning. But when you lose those three starters, there certainly are some unknowns. And so, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out this fall. I think our returning guys are going to continue to get better. Our freshmen that got a lot of playing time this year, I believe, are going to continue to get better. And I like where we're at on the mound. And I think we're going to be able to pitch it well. And, you know, we'll have some depth on the mound also. So if we can play good defense and you know, make the routine play, I think we'll have a chance to be okay.
Yeah, how much do you depend on what you see in the fall to help you garner and show what's going to happen in the spring? Do you rely a lot on the fall, or do you really basically wait till guys will win and lose positions in the spring?
Well, a little bit of both. You know, I think it gives us an idea in the fall, you know, what we're going to be looking at and who we think can contribute where. And, you know, certainly we don't set a starting lineup after fall baseball. And so it's all, you know, it's all up in the air. And even in the season, it seems like the lineup changes from day one to game 56. And so, you know, you never know how it's going to shake out, but you do have a pretty good idea after fall baseball, you know, who can play where and who can do what for you.
Yes, I know we've talked about this before, about the games, and that everything is just seems to be compacted so much in the spring. Do you ever see that? I mean, they're still talking about that now, but do you ever really see that changing? That maybe they'll give the fall ball a little bit more of a playing time, or do you always see it basically in the spring?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know. I wish I could give you a better answer. You know, just not sure right now. I certainly think there's a lot of merit to the fall model, the fall-spring model, and playing some games in the fall. And, you know, I think that could drive up attendance for us and really, you know, help us in a lot of ways. But, you know, again, it's not up to me. It's up to the people at the NCAA. And hopefully they see it that way, because I think it could be a positive, especially for Northern baseball.
Yes, that would be great for Northern baseball. Hey, do you ever see a chance I know people never say never, but do you ever see a chance that maybe one day you might try to go up and coach in the pros?
No, the college game is completely different from the pro game, you know, and a lot of the times in the pro game, you know, those coaches come from pro baseball, and they get right into it, and it's kind of rare to see a college coach go into pro ball. You know, the second part of it is the schedule is awfully tough in pro ball.
Yes,
you're on the road
is.
An awful lot, and you know, I've got a family with three young kids, and you know, I want to see my kids grow up and you know, play high school sports and graduate from high school and things like that. And you know, those guys in pro ball sacrifice an awful lot to do what they do, and you know, I really enjoy the college game. I enjoy the college atmosphere. I enjoy teaching and you know, taking guys and trying to make them better and get them prepared for pro ball.
Yes, and that's great, Jay. I know we love you around here. Hopefully you'll be here for another 20 to 30 years.
Well, that's the plan. I certainly hope so.
Hey, Jake, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll get together and talk some more baseball as the season goes along and it gets longer and longer. And that's what always amazes me, how baseball and kids, I know you have to love to play it because it's certainly such a long season and off season. I mean, and you have to do so much in the off season to get ready for the next season. It just seems to be like it's a never-ending grind.
It is. You know, it's a grind, but there's no better sport to play, in my opinion. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a beautiful game, and especially when it's played right. And, you know, that's our goal, is to play it the right way. And hopefully we get a lot of players that can play for a long time.
Yes. Now, the field is just about done. I mean, I know they've been doing gradually and doing more work. How is it right now? Is it just about complete with everything? I know they've just about finished all the things, you know, in the field, but it's a beautiful field. I mean, the Cobes Field, as it used to be called, McLean Stadium now, it's a beautiful, beautiful place now.
Well, it really is. You know, Earl, I appreciate that. But, yeah, Cobes Field itself looks as good as it ever has, and our groundskeepers do a fantastic job. And McLean Stadium is a real jewel in the middle of campus, I believe. And they're working hard right now to finish up the permanent ticket booth and the walkway and, you know, the plaza entranceway. And that'll be done, by September 1st. And so that will really kind of polish things off and cap off a beautiful facility. And certainly we got some, you know, plans and ideas for down the road. I don't think you're ever, you know, quite finished with anything. But at the same time, it's certainly a very nice facility. It's only going to continue to get better.
Okay. Hey, Jake, I want to thank you for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And I'll call you back later on, and we'll get together a little bit later on, buddy.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Earl.
Okay, thank you. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Jake Boss Jr. talking baseball with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Well, we come and we talk to sports, all kind of sports with you each and every day right here on AM 870 WKAR. It's always a pleasure talking with Jake. I learned so much about baseball and college baseball when you talk with Jake Boss Jr. So, and we'll do that from time to time and let him bring us up to date on how the baseball team is looking. It certainly is improving. Baseball has really improved since Jake has taken over as head coach here. He's just done a great job right here at Michigan State and improving the baseball team. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We've been looking at the pro teams, mostly pro sports. We're looking at today is the day the teams will find out who their free agents will sign in football. A lot of the NFL free agents will have to sign by 4 o'clock today. That's the deadline, and we'll see how they sign, who signs where, or do they get the money they want, or will they have to sign a tender to sign a 1-year deal? That will happen to some guys. I will think some guys will work out a long-term deal, hopefully, but a lot of deals would taking that 1-year deal and not getting a long-term deal. But that's part of the sport. We see that one guy's going to get a monster contract, and that's in basketball. Jeremy Lin, he doesn't lose. I mean, people think he's going to lose, but it looks like he signed the offer sheet with Houston. It doesn't look like the Knicks are going to match it. So he's going to get a very good contract from Houston. And then we'll see how good of a player he is. He's a decent player. I'm not sure how good he is, but we'll see more of Jeremy Lin coming up. He was a decent college player, and he was a decent player for those 25 games that he did with the Knicks. He didn't get along well as far as him and Carmelo Anthony was in the lineup, so we'll see what happens when he goes to Houston. Maybe it'll be even a little bit better for him. He'll have more freedom in Houston, that's for sure. So we'll see how that goes. The time now, 40 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
After the Civil War, hundreds of former slaves sought to reunite with loved ones, family members long ago sold and sent away. Heather Andrea Williams recounts the pain, longing, and hope of that search in her new book. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Help me to find my people. Next, Talk the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Sunny and a high in the mid-90s today, then partly cloudy with a low of 72 tonight. For Tuesday, mostly sunny with a chance of rain and thunderstorms and a high of 101. Partly sunny on Wednesday with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Not as hot. Wednesday's high 85. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll free, 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR in East Lansing. So we want you to come and talk with us, join us each and every day, give our guests a call, or just call us up and talk sports if you want to talk with myself or Alex on the other side, and or talk with him. You can talk with either one of us, that is, and talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. And if you've never called us before, we ask you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Well, Alex, you told me that you went up to Toronto this week and saw the Blue Jays play. So how was that?
Oh, I did, Earl. It was very interesting to see. This Blue Jay team we discussed earlier, but for those listening, there's not one player in that starting lineup that is hitting over 300 right now. And the funny thing is, with no one hitting over 300, their 3-4, that is Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, they each have 26 and 24 home runs each. So they're really a home run team first, is what I found.
That's pretty good. Those two are hitting, and it seems like, even though they don't have any 300 hitters, they seem like they hit pretty well, though. Isn't that right? They've just had a lot of good hitters.
Oh, yeah. Last game, they as tough as a division that they are in with Boston, New York. Boston, granted, they're in last place this year, but with New York and as good as the Orioles are playing, they still have a very good hitting team, and especially in an American League where it is a hitters league. They do have those good contact hitters. They've got a lot of young prospects coming up right now, a lot of players they are still developing, is what I found. I think maybe in 2 or 3 years, this team could be contending to compete for first. But back to the stadium here for a second. Their stadium is unbelievable. I mean, they have a retractable roof. They opened it up for the day I was there. They have a hotel room that's right overlooking the whole stadium. So a lot of the players often will stay at the hotel, walk right downstairs for the game. So I think that was pretty cool to see.
And that is nice if you can stay. It certainly can. Certainly won't have to worry about getting fined. You know, if you're staying there, you know, if you get fined for missing, being late for practice or something, that's got to be a problem.
We don't want to pull the Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander's car broke down three hours before a game. So maybe Justin Verlander should consider staying in a hotel next to the stadium next time, huh?
Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, he pitched well yesterday. He pitched a 3-hit shutout pitched 8 innings. So he had a good outing, his first start since the All-Star game.
Yeah, absolutely, Earl. And it was great to see that he didn't maybe have to miss a start or two. You know, even though he threw an inning or two, gave up 5 runs in that All-Star game, he still came out and, you know, pitched pretty well back to the old Justin Verlander.
Yeah, he followed his usual routine. I know during the All-Star game he changed his routine because he just came out throwing as hard as he could,
right.
And he probably shouldn't have done that, but he went back to his regular routine and it's working for him.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And let's hope, knock on wood, that this team can stay consistent as they have been lately.
Yeah, and let me see. What we've seen as far as in the bat, we've seen Draymond Green has looked well, in his couple of games here with Golden State Warriors. We've seen the young Detroit Pistons look well. So they've been looking well in the preseason. We know that won't hold much when they start playing in the fall, but at least right now they've been looking pretty good.
Oh, yeah, and you have to remember, a guy like Andre Drummond, as much as of a steal he was for the Detroit Pistons, he shot 29% at Connecticut in his freshman year there. So I think they're slowly working with him on his free throw shots and along with a lot of the other rookies that they have right now. And hopefully Andre Drummond can step in right away next season and contribute.
Yes, he won't. Until he becomes a better free throw shooter. You won't have him see him much in the fourth quarter. He'll probably be playing the first three quarters. You know, you won't see him playing down the stretch until he becomes a decent free throw shooter. And that's something you hope he can develop. Some guys have developed and became pretty good free throw shooters over time. And they struggle with it all the time. So we'll just have to wait and see how he handles that free throw shooting.
Yeah, and here's a question for you, Earl. Look at him compared to Ben Wallace. Ben Wallace, also a poor free throw shooter throughout his career. Not as bad as 29%, granted, but still, you know, not over, you know, a granted league average of free throw shooting for Ben Wallace. But the difference between Ben Wallace and Andre Drummond is that Andre Drummond can really contribute scoring down low. And he's such a bigger body. Yeah, Ben Wallace does have a little bit higher hops than him. He is a little bit more athletic in terms of, you know, of quickness, athleticism, things of that nature. But Drummond down low can be comparable, you know, to a Dwight Howard in that aspect. I mean, he is so dominant with his size, and he really does know how to use it, is what I found. So my question for you, Earl, and for the listeners out there, would you take Ben Wallace, you know, now, or Andre Drummond in 3 years?
You have to go with the upside, with Andre Drummond and his upside. Yeah, you have to do that. And, you know, hopefully he just develops as a free throw shooter. He's got very big hands, so I don't know if that hurts or helps him. But he's got very big hands, larger hands than a person for his size. So that could help him, and it might not help him. But we'll just have to wait and see on that one. But, yeah, I would take him, and he's got a great upside, that's for sure.
Yeah, and besides that, I mean, do you see him having a very lengthy career? What's your future opinion on that?
Yeah, he could definitely play a 9 to 10 years at least, if not more. Yeah, he certainly got a chance to have a very long career. He's young and he's strong. He's only 19, and once he really learns the game, that's the thing. These guys coming to the league, into the NBA, they don't really know how to play the game. He's still learning how to play the game. So once he learns really how to play the game, that's only going to help him. So I think once he learns to play the game, he'll be a very good NBA player.
Sure, absolutely. But to play devil's advocate here for a second, look at a guy like Kwame Brown. This guy, very comparable in size to Drummond. Drummond, I think, a little bit better shape. But Kwame Brown, when he was 19, 18 years old in high school, very dominant. I mean, this guy was projected to have one of the brightest futures. But the difference between Drummond and Kwame Brown is Kwame Brown does shoot better free throw percentages than Andre Drummond. So you got to look at a guy like that. I mean, this guy could easily be somewhat comparable to a Kwame Brown bust.
Yeah, that's true. I never was a big fan of Kwame Brown. He was a good defensive player. He never could really shoot that well overall, just shooting from the field. But he was a good defensive player and he's made a ton of money. I hear he's going to get a $7 million contract this year. And I mean, that's amazing. He came out of high school when he was 18, and now I think he's 31 or 32, and he might get a big contract this year because he can play defense and he can rebound. And when you do those two things, at least those two, three things, that can keep you in the league for a long time. So that's really keeping Kwame Brown around just because he's been a good defender and a very good rebounder.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And a guy like Kwame Brown, of his stature, I mean, did you like him when he was on the Pistons?
No, not really. I became to appreciate his little bit of his rebounding and his defensive play. But no, he never. I always thought, like a lot of people, I thought he should have been a better all around player with his overall game. And his overall game never really developed. But he did. He did develop as a rebounder and as a defender. So he I have to take my hat off to him on those two issues because he did play those two parts of his game develop very well. But the rest of the game, no, he did not. I never was a big fan of his, but you know, that's what happens in basketball. Some guys develop, and that's the thing. When you come right out of high school like he did, you know, they get a chance. So I've heard some pro coaches say they like some of the high school kids because they're a clean slate and they can teach them everything they want to teach them. But the other thing is, big guys, it just takes them a little bit longer to catch on to the game and learn the game. And that's something that all takes them a little bit longer to learn the game, that's for sure. And we're gonna talk. Well, we got a caller on the line, and let's see. We've got let's see who we have here. We got Mr. Tate from Atlanta. Mr. Tate, how you doing, buddy?
All right, pretty good. How about yourself, Mr. Robinson?
Okay.
I just wanted to call in and And first of all, you guys do a wonderful job. As you know, I listen to you guys all the time. Mm-hmm. But just to comment on a couple things, obviously with the optimism and a little bit better offensive game, I would definitely take that Andre Drummond over that Ben Wallace. Of course, you know, at one point when Ben Wallace was in Orlando, or even when he was with the Bullets at the time that they were the Bullets, we didn't know that the Ben Wallace was going to be that Ben Wallace that he was with Detroit. So even at that point, entering both of their careers, I still would have taken Andre Drummond, who is a little bit more as far as the athleticism and whatnot. At that time, big Ben Wallace coming out of Virginia Union, if you remember, he was just pretty much a big body just to be throwing in there until he got with the Pistons and then learned his role a little bit more. Furthermore, I think that Andre Drummond is somewhat, if I have to compare him to anyone, I would definitely say that that person would be like a DeAndre Jordan type of guy. He is athletic to be such a big guy. Obviously, he's not one of the guys that can be looked over as far as Detroit is concerned. But just to touch on a couple of things, you know, I'm down here in Atlanta where Kwame Brown is from, so I don't blame you guys one little bit as far as being a bust. Everybody knows it. He really wasn't all that great, you know,
right.
as a high school player, but he was number one in the country. Last but not least, hey guys, I appreciate you for having me on. I just think, just to touch on one last thing, Mr. Robinson, that with you saying that a lot of the players is coming in at a young age, that's the benefit of a guy like a Draymond Green. When you have a guy that stays all 4 years with something to prove, not to mention the high IQ, that's what they lack. Now it's so much about jumping out of the gym and athleticism, but they lack the high IQ, and that was the benefits why Draymond Green would be considered a steal over some of the even more lottery picks. Thank you so much, guys, for having me on. You guys have a great day, and I'll keep listening.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Tate. Yeah, he's definitely right about that. That gives Draymond Green a very big leap because, you know, he's got all that knowledge that he's gained from playing in college for four years. A lot of guys, they just try to get by on their athleticism coming out of high school or a year or two of college. They're great athletes, and that's what they want to take. They don't know how to play the game, but they're certainly very good athletes, and they buy off of that. Some of them rely on that too much. They try to seal that. Then if they get hurt or something, then they realize they've got a lot more to learn about the game, and that's it. So no, he's dead on about Draymond Green and his basketball IQ. It's always pays to have a big basketball IQ, and it certainly helped him, and it's going to help him in his future as he gets ready to play in the NBA. Hopefully, I'm quite sure. I'm pretty sure he's going to make that Golden State Warriors roster. He's definitely going to, you know, because they can understand and see how smart he is and how he can help a team in more ways. You know, you can help a team in more than just scoring the basketball and putting the ball in the bucket. Yes, that may be the main way, but there are a lot of other ways you can help your team. So and Draymond knows how to do that. So hats off to him, and hopefully he just has a very successful career with the Golden State Warriors. The time, 53 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Also want to mention, there was a fight over the weekend. If many of you probably saw it, it was Amir Khan fighting Danny Garcia. Danny Garcia, who was unbeaten pro, was 24-0, and he won the fight, beating the lightweight champion Amir Khan from Britain, who was a very good fighter, a devastating puncher, and he knocked him out. Very good win, a big win for Danny Garcia. You know, he wasn't expected to win that fight. He was a 6-1 underdog in the fight, but Garcia put out Amir Khan. That's what he did. It was a good fight for him. And congratulations to Danny Garcia out of Philadelphia. He fought a very good fight for him. So that's what you have. We all like upsets, no matter what the sport. We all like upsets, and we love to see some of these things happen in sports. No matter what it is, we like to see an upset. So that's one of the things that we always look at in sports. See, how did this team win? How did this team happen to get a victory or get a win? Because we all look at those upsets, and we all look like upsets, whether in basketball, football, baseball, you know, hockey or wherever. We like the upsets, especially when, you know, you have those people saying, oh, they have no chance. They have no chance. They're not going to win. You know, I always say every team has a chance. If you even though the other team might have a substantial size advantage, you still have a chance to win. You're out there, and if you've got your uniform on, you feel that you can win. And that's a thing. That's one thing we figure out. Some of the people that do the announcing and things haven't figured out. It doesn't matter how big you are. You've got a chance to win. If you're out there with them and you're both competing in the field, you definitely have a chance to win, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, hockey, wherever. You certainly have a chance for your team and to help your team win. So I know we're getting close to the end of the show. We've got a few more minutes left. And Alex, I know, what else did you do beside you went to the ball game this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, Toronto's a wonderful place. There's the CN Tower there. I went all the way up to the top floor. There's like a little glass. If you stand over the glass at the CN Tower, you can see the whole city even above and below you. Mm-hmm. You're like looking down into the ground, almost like a movie. So, I mean, that was very cool. A very good sightseeing place to see. They have some great restaurants in Toronto. I mean, you talk about ballpark food. Yeah, this place wasn't really known for its ballpark food, but I did go to some very good restaurants.
Okay.
There's a place right on the main street of Toronto. The main street is called Yonge Street. Very comparable to a Grand River here in East Lansing, or maybe a Michigan Avenue in Chicago. But this place, Yonge Street, they had this restaurant called Wanda's Belgium Waffles. Mm. And this place in the morning, you go there, they put ice cream, caramel, all these things you want on your waffles. They put fruit, whipped cream. It's incredible. And for a very good price, especially with Toronto, it's a very high-priced city, it was a very good price breakfast. So, I mean, besides the food, the entertainment, there were some couple shows going on, a couple concerts. It was a great weekend. And with baseball, you know, talking with my man Earl over here, recapping that Blue Jays game, nothing better.
Thanks. That's always fun. When you go someplace like that and you have a good time, it's very, very nice and very appreciative. And so glad you had a great time in Toronto there, because you're right, it's a great, great city. So I assume you'll be going back again.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But Earl, I mean, you've been to some ballparks in your time. So what's your favorite ballpark and why?
Well, I guess I have to go with the old Wrigley Field. I mean, that's still one of the best. I mean, I'm still amazed that, they've been such a poor team on the field, but they always draw. They've always drawn just a ton of people, and they're about the only team that can lose year after year after year, and still it's just about sell out just about every game. It's amazing how they do it, but Wrigley Field is definitely one of the best ballparks in America. And yeah, so I'm just amazed that it's still going as strong as it is, and people still go there as much as they do. But Wrigley Field is just a beautiful place to watch a game. I've watched some beautiful games. Been to the other Chicago field. I've been to both of them, but the Wrigley Field is just something about Wrigley Field that people love, and they really just go to Wrigley Field. They go to the White Sox field because it's a nice modern day ballpark. And they win. As long as they keep winning, the people will keep going. So you have to win. That's the thing about baseball today. Baseball, one thing I've always said about baseball, especially today, in the old days, people would go and watch the game, just go because they like the sport of baseball. Today, they don't not only will like the sport of baseball, you almost have to win to get people to go out. I mean, people just won't go to baseball games because they love the sport. Whereas I think it used to be a little bit of that, where you'd go to see a game because you love the game of baseball. Very rarely. When people go to the game, you don't see people filling out scorecards when they go to games now. You'll see some of the old-timers getting cards and filling out a card, filling out a baseball card. But you just don't see a lot of that among the youngsters going out today. But hopefully, if you go to a baseball game, you might get a scorecard, fill out the card, and just go and enjoy the game. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening today. Thank you all for calling. We invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. We want you to come back and join us tomorrow. We also want you to have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening. And I look forward to hearing from you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Remember, every day, Monday through Friday, 1:05 to 2 o'clock. right here on WKAR. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and I'll see you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.